Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins, James and Dia from the back of the nest. It's a pleasure to be in your company, boys. I've got to admit, I was expecting one of you to go, Eagles.
Oh,
I thought that was going to be my welcome.
Unfortunately not. The way that our pre-season's going, that no one's really optimistic. It doesn't seem like it anyways. No one's really looking forward to next season.
Well, I just blame the weather. I'm just exhausted from that heat outside. And I haven't got the energy to shout out Eagles.
Yeah, I was actually outside today. I'm just trying to get time.
I'm glad you've just said that, because I thought I was the only person who I'm not enjoying this weather. It's too hot.
Well, it was lovely coming in this studio, but yeah. You were saying, Charlie, earlier, they didn't have the aircon on.
That must have been awful. Awful. 26. In it. I walked into a sauna. Yeah, this is how they treat me here. First day, a big blast of heat. Yeah, in the deep end with the Palace boys, but don't worry, we're going to get through it for the next hour. You've just touched on it there. We have to start pre-season. What has gone wrong?
Everything, really.
We'll start with that then.
Yeah, so Wan-Bissaka, of course, he got sold, which is understandable with the price that United paid for him. And if you're looking at the pre-season games, we've only won one game, and that was the first game against FC Luzerne. And that's really it. If you're looking at some of the performances, even though it's pre-season, it's been really poor. And I feel like Palace fans in general now are slightly concerned by it going into next season, because there hasn't been any signs of optimism, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure that trip abroad was a success, really, was it? I mean, it didn't really go very well. We didn't get probably the results that we expected. We're missing a couple of players. I mean, Zaha was away, but we can't keep relying on Zaha, and you know, who knows if he's going to be around next season anyway. I agree with you. It's been a little bit negative because Wan-Bissaka's gone. I'm still not happy with the fee. I still think we could have kept him, but then if the player wants to go, it's set him up for life, 5-year contract. He's making 20-odd million out of it over 5 years. And, you know, every boy's dream is probably to play for somebody like Man United. So you can't stop a young lad like that. But as DR said, you know, I think what we need is we know our weaknesses, and we need a couple of reasonable signings just to get a little bit of confidence back.
Very difficult to keep a player that doesn't want to be there. A player wants out, his agent's going to push for the move. He might not turn up to training. We're going to be talking about that. Obviously, Zaha, will he do that? But we are talking pre-season first. And, you know, I've done my research. I looked into it this morning. And on the surface, terrible. 6-2 to Barnet and 1-0 to Bromley. But I dug a little deeper. I looked at the highlights and, you know, read the team reports, read all the stuff coming out from the games. Very youthful sides. You know, you wasn't playing your full strength side. Certainly not the side you'll be feeding in the Premier League. How much does pre-season really matter?
Look, I feel like for the youngsters, it matters a lot because they really don't get a chance during the season. And you look at the Barnet game, that they had first team players, a couple first team players and youngsters. And from the looks of it, well, you could look at the result and the performances. None of them stepped up. And then the Bromley game is purely youngsters. Again, no one really stepped up. And yes, you shouldn't look at the results too much. But then again, individual performances, I feel like even though it's pre-season, it still matters because this is your time to shine, really, for some of them. And it's just frustrating from a Palace fan's perspective because I was actually expecting one or two at least to step up, and no one has. And you look at
looking for the next stars coming through.
Exactly, and you look at our transfer activity, it doesn't seem like we're going to bring in anyone anytime soon, and the transfer window's closing in about 2 weeks as well. So that's the thing. It's not looking nice going into next season. But then again, as James mentioned, we haven't had Zaha. He's come back from the AFCONs and he's on a holiday. Mamadou Sakho, he had an injury problem and he didn't really play in Switzerland. He didn't actually play. So it's not like we've had our first team back. But then again, I was watching the Nottingham game the other day, and the first half was just absolutely dreadful, and that's what I'm worried about. We sold Wan-Bissaka, and now it seems like teams have figured us out that they haven't got any fullbacks to defend. Patrick Wanano and Joe Ward can't. So I feel like you can slowly see signs of, you know, how teams could attack us next season, and that's a little bit worrying.
What it seems to me, and please, James, tell me if I'm wrong, no one wants to lose in pre-season. No one wants to lose any football games. But you're losing football games, then you're not signing one, and it's sort of like a domino effect. You're like, well, this is terrible. But I feel like the weak transfer activity has made these pre-season results seem worse. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think the problem is that, and I think Roy came out with it in the press today or recently, and said that Steve Parish and Dougie Friedman, who's our footballing director, are desperately trying to get strength in depth, because quite clearly, you know, these games, especially Barnet, I think we went 2-0 up, you know. Yeah. A couple of experienced players up front, I think, I can't remember who scored, but we...
Connor,
Wickham played, yeah, Wickham,
yeah. Yeah, but we... So we went 2-0 up, and then you're looking at these, like you say, the youngsters that are coming through, and the second string, these are going to be the second string team, and you know, to go 2-0 up and then lose 6-2... it's just unacceptable for a Premiership side, even in a friendly, I feel. And in the Premier League, you have to have 22 very good players. You can't just have the first 11 and rely on them week in, week out. And obviously, this is why Steve Parish and Dougie Friedman are concerned, and Roy's concerned. And I think it's becoming very, very difficult to replace players. The other teams are not making players available. They're tying them into long contracts. And the only players that seem to become available, though, are the ones that are not playing well or coming back from injury, because these seem to be the players that we're going for. Nathaniel Klein, you know, ex-player, 28 years of age, so he's at the wrong end of the 20s. Came back from injury, didn't really get back into Liverpool, so I got loaned out to Bournemouth. Didn't play very well for Bournemouth. Bournemouth fans will tell you that. And we're possibly looking at him, and I'm thinking, well, hold on a second, but he's going to be high wages, he's going to be quite expensive, and he didn't actually have a good season for Bournemouth. So, yeah, it worries me. And then we're looking at Ayew, you know, another player that we had on loan last season, scored one goal. You know, he's a striker, you know, you get paid for the goals you scored, and we're looking to re-sign him. Yeah, OK, it's only $2.5 million, but it takes up a striker's place. And that worries me. And then we're looking at James McArthur from Everton, who's been injured, I think, coming back from injury. And, yeah, you know, a few years ago, he was a good player, good, reliable player for Everton.
Another one that's injury prone.
One that's coming back from an injury. And we all know from our own experience, from Yannick Bolasie going to Everton, you know, great player, fantastic for us. Went to Everton, got in the team, started playing really well, got a horrendous injury, and never got his place back. And he's been loaned out into Belgium, and you can't get back in. So,
well, is this where the problem lies then, James? You've got that money. What is the general consensus of Palace fans? That they want that to be reinvested almost straight away into the first team. And then the players you're linked with are injury prone, players that are coming off away from bigger clubs. And this isn't really what sells to you as an exciting new dawn, new chapter.
Yeah, I'm worried that we are going to spend too much money on players that maybe are possibly coming back from injury. So might be, again, injury prone. Also, players are at the wrong end of their career. James McArthur and Nathaniel Klein are both 28, I believe. I really want us to use our expertise, and maybe Dougie Friedman is the man for this, is to go into the lower leagues and just try and find some decent players. I mean, Dougie did it for us before. He found Milaj Jedanak, you know, from, I think he was playing in Turkey at the time. And what a player he turned out to be, and a captain for Crystal Palace.
But how much of a risk and reward is that? Is that really that sensible? Because we can talk about the odd ones that were. You've just mentioned one there, another one, Jamie Vardy springs to mind. But are they few and far between? And then is that a quick way for Palace to get a lot of stick and go, you've got that money and you'll develop it in League One, Championship? Is that what they want? Is that what you both want?
I feel like it's a bit too risky for my liking, because even the teams look at us as a Premier League club, and they're going to demand lots of money for players who haven't really proven themselves. So you might go for a League One side or Championship side, and they might want 10 or 15 million for a player. And it's a massive gamble. So it's hard with Palace, because even though we got 50 million from Aaron Wan-Bissaka, our problem doesn't seem like money itself. It's how we spend the money on wages. And Wan-Bissaka wasn't a top earner at the club, so that doesn't really change anything. And we're still spending so much on players, likes of Wilf and Sacco, who earn a lot, and they're still at the club. So it's not as easy to say, oh, we got 50 million, let's just spend it back, when you technically can't do that because of how much you already spend on players right now at a club. Mm. So I find it a bit difficult. So I understand why we are slow with the transfer activity. But then again, every player that we're linked with, it seems like another Premier League club wants them as well. And when that happens, I automatically get worried, because I'm not optimistic of us competing with other Premier League clubs in terms of signing players, and due to how we're structured right now.
Well, but is this not a problem for every club? Because this is a shorter window this year, isn't it? It's not going to the end of August. It's only going to the end of July. So there isn't much time anyway. But a number of young players that you've just mentioned there, and you said you could drop down in the leagues. Reece James is another name. He's the Chelsea player. He was on loan at Wigan last year. He was incredible. Now, I know a lot of Chelsea people, and the Chelsea fans who are here on Loveball, they rave about Reece James. He's a real player for them, a gem for the future. If you could get someone like that, is that someone you'd want?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of respect for fans that will come on a show like this and say, look, he is a really quality player, because I think there's no one more that you can trust than a fan that goes to watch a match every week in, week out. And I don't know enough about Reece James, but, you know, he's been touted at being valued at 20 million. You know, we were discussing it earlier, hasn't really had any Premiership experience.
Yeah, but James, you can't moan at that. You just said we've got to go to the lower league. So no Premier League experience. 45 games last year for Wigan.
I agree, but 20 million does sound a lot of money.
It's the market. The market's crazy. 20 million now.
It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, we're hearing today Callum Hudson-Odoi, 180 grand a week, new contract at Chelsea, which is just, I mean, I think personally it's outrageous. Is he 180 grand a week? The market is only dictating that, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a limited market. There's not so many players around or being made available. So, yeah, possibly. I don't know the position. Reece James is a sort of defender stroke midfielder, isn't he?
He's a fullback. And I feel like if we were to spend 20 million, I would go for Reece James. And it is a risk, but the sign from what he's showing at Wigan last season, for example, is that he is a quality player. And as you said with the Chelsea fans, and he has got massive potential. So, I'll take that gamble, because I am genuinely worried about our fullback going into next season. As last season, when we had Wan-Bissaka, teams would normally target Patrick Van Aanholt. But now, we've got Joel Ward there and Van Aanholt, and both really struggle to defend. So I'm genuinely concerned going into next season, having both of them as our fullbacks, and think that we need another person.
Well, I do agree that we do possibly need to have a look at replacing Wan-Bissaka, but what a lot of people have posted on social
Cole
media.
Cole Jenkinson's available.
Oh, yeah. No.
I heard that, yeah.
No way.
I'm not sure. But I have to say, if we've got these funds available, you know, a lot of people are saying, why are we not redirecting these funds to other positions, like striker positions, where we can't score? Because, you know, without Zaha, we've really struggled to score. And with Benteke, you know, not finding form since when he first joined us, and no one else has really stepped up to the plate. I mean, you know, unless Connor Wickham has a fantastic season, which we're all praying for.
And they did give him a new contract, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. So they've really put their faith in him.
I think they've got, you know, an idea. I think they feel that he's had enough months in training since probably January when he came back, and he's had a couple of games here or there and been a substitute. So he's probably quite fit, and he's been through pre-season. So, yeah, but I don't think we can rely on the likes of Benteke and Connor Wickham, and that just leaves Zaha. So I would have liked to have seen us go for a striker. And I know we were looking at Batshuayi, but I'm not sure he's going to be available now.
Well, let's just quickly take it back to the last day of the season then. Season's over, before pre-season, players aren't even on the beach yet. Mm. You've looked at yourselves and gone, these are the positions we really need to strengthen. What were they?
Striker. My top priority would have been getting Batshuayi back at the club, because he actually managed to fit into Roy's system, which is very rare for a striker, as you can see. Even at his previous clubs, I think it was Odon Wingi at West Brom that scored over 10 goals. I'm not even too sure if it was even over 10. But yeah, Batshuayi, because he's a natural goal scorer and he knows Roy's system and he fit really well in it. And that's the only, that's the position that I looked at.
And I think both of us maybe are looking at fullbacks. I think PVA, Patrick Van Aanholt, has been a bit of a weak link, not as consistent with light. There's not as much cover there, and obviously losing Wan-Bissaka, we're relying on, you know, an old head as Joel Ward. Is it too much for him? Who knows? We don't know. We'll have to see how it goes. But I'd suggest that, yes, last game of the season, we've lost Batshuayi because he went back to Chelsea. We've lost Aaron Wan-Bissaka, so that presents itself as a right fullback that we're looking to replace. And left back was probably our weakest position most of the season. So I'd say at least one fullback, but definitely a striker.
So there you have it, wing backs and a striker. We've looked at potential players going out. We've looked at potential players coming in, and it's time to look at one big potential player going out.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here with me, Charlie Hawkins, James and Dia. And it's now time to talk about Zaha. But if two opinions wasn't enough on the Eagles, we've now been joined by Nick. And I'm sure he'll have plenty to say on Zaha. Nick, are you there?
You're right, Charlie. I hope DR and James are treating the new boy well, are they?
Well, it's only 20 minutes in, so yeah, I'm okay so far. maybe ask again in half an hour. I'm glad you've come on. You're going to stick up for me, Nick.
Yeah, well, you might see me in the next couple of weeks, because I'm going to be on anyway. Right, I need to interject on something you said before the break. James says a lot of wise things there about players and ageing squad, but he seems to be of the mind that with all this Wan-Bissaka money, I feel that's actually kept us going. We needed that money just to almost stay afloat. I've seen charts of accounts over the last few years. The wage bill is absolutely horrendous. We're on the start of a new FFP cycle, so we've got to be really, really careful with the budget and stuff. So actually, losing Wan-Bissaka might have actually helped keep us going, which means we don't have to sell Wilf.
Are you saying, Nick, that Crystal Palace were in that bad state that 50 million was really needed just to, not to keep you safe, but help you go in there? Because we know with wages, FFP, you've mentioned, that they straight away, that 50 million's almost just gone to paying the wage bill maybe for next year.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, everybody goes on about, oh yeah, all the TV money's coming in, look how big the deals are. But look how much the players' wages grow exponentially. And to see the graph of ours, it's almost at 60, 70 degrees over the 5 years. I don't know if you can visualise that. But yeah, so I think we could be getting ahead of ourselves. If we can get somebody cheap, that'd be good. I mean, I don't know what happened about the two lads we were looking at Brentford. That seemed to have disappeared. Don't know if anything more will come of that. Also, there's lots of rumblings about a takeover, but we know the Americans want to come out. And then there's a third American owner. And the problem is some of their shares have been divvied out into hundreds of micro shares. And all those people want a big, big dividend back for that.
Nick,
so actually selling the club is going to be really hard. And why we've got that, we've got the limbo, because who's going to splash out 60 million quid on a player if you don't know who's going to be there? And you can't sell your best asset because we'll go down. So even if Arsenal offer 100 million, we should just say to Wilf, no, one more season.
Yeah, I agree with that, Nick. And I do agree with you that I think we were 40 million in the loss, weren't we, on the accounts. So maybe that Wan-Bissaka deal has allowed us to, you know, balance the books. And I know that, you know, Parrish has said that, and the board have said that, you know, pretty much all the TV money goes on wages. So I'm with you on that one. But all I'm thinking of is that, you know, you've got to speculate to accumulate. And, you know, if this Wan-Bissaka deal hadn't happened, then definitely it wouldn't have been the money available. And I think, you know, a club is always going to be a bit, for want of a better phrase, overdrawn. And we have to maybe sort of, you know, speculate a little bit here and say, well, OK, you know, the books are better than they were before the deal on Wan-Bissaka. But to maintain our Premiership survival, we still need to use a significant amount of that 50 million to boost, you know, the positions that I've talked about.
You're spot on there. It's a fine balancing act. With the fullback position you mentioned, I've heard lots of good stuff about this Mitchell guy that appeared in the pre-season tournament. He got injured, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he's due back in a few weeks. So hopefully this Mitchell guy will be good. Back to Will, because I've got to go in a minute. Sorry. What's really irked me the most is seeing on so many sports websites and web pages, Sky, you do it, picture of Will with an Arsenal badge next to him. I've seen it so many times. And also on Twitter, Arsenal fans, don't be condescending. We might be a little club, but don't look down on us and say, oh, yeah, you should let him go because we're bigger than you. You know, have a bit of gravitas about yourself, Arsenal fans. It's not good.
It's not good. It could certainly be deemed as patronising. He means as much to you. They want him. But I just want to ask you something quickly, Nick, because we did touch upon it earlier. Will mentioned players, maybe looking in the lower leagues for players. You just mentioned about the guys at Brentford. Are you really telling me that you're happy that, you know, because you are a Premier League top half side now. Are you really telling me that you're happy with your team looking in the lower leagues for players? Does that scream that you're trying to take the next step up?
I'd like to know that we're looking anywhere at the moment, because there just doesn't seem to be anything other than, you know, half-truth and rumour. Let's hope things are going on behind the scenes. But if they're good enough, they can come up and play. I mean, we were after that Norwich right back, I think. He's meant to be very, very good. I can't recall his name. But, you know, they're not going to sell him. They've just got promoted. So, I don't know. We need to get somebody in, as long as we don't have to put up with watching Thorloff.
Thing is, Nick, there's not, I'll tell you what, mate, there's not a lot of transfer activity out there all round, to be honest with you. I just, you know, unless, if I could see one or two free transfers happening every day, then I'd be worried. But there just doesn't seem to be any transfer activity out there at all. And I think once you see one or two, then you get the knock-on effect.
The chain in a house buying. Exactly. You know, they've got free up money.
Exactly. And I'm not panicking at this stage. And I think it's going to be, yeah, unfortunately, it's going to be the same old story last couple of days. Massive, you know, players driving from Birmingham to London and last minute signings. And then it's going to be, well, if we get him in, we can sell him. And I just think that's the way it is. And unfortunately, it's going to be like that this summer again. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you on being frustrated, though.
Simon Jordan did reveal on a podcast I listened to that it wasn't uncommon for football teams to turn the clock back on the fax machine, because they still use such an outdated thing that they could say they got their sent it across on time. What a crazy world we live in.
Crazy world, Nick. We really thank you for joining us and giving us your view. Nick there, another Palace fan. He wasn't happy, Will. James, he's put you right. But yeah. There it is. But players in the lower league, we have to talk about, because we didn't, Zaha. Mm. For me, I know you two have obviously got an opinion on it, you've got a view. Is it one of those things where, you know, if he wants to go, maybe, you know, he's played his part, he's contributed, he wants to leave, maybe you're okay with that, you're fine. If you get a good price for him, that's okay. We don't know what you're going to say yet. I know you want to butt in, James. But if it drags on and then you get all this messy divorce, it's a bit chaos. Is he going to train? Is his brother's going to say certain things? Other things are being leaked to the press. And it hangs over you. And then that almost, like Nick just said there, it sort of impacts on your transfer dealings, because you're waiting for this Zaha money. Well, you need to replace him. Then it's this big cloud that lingers over and it sort of becomes a more messy divorce, doesn't it?
I can't see that happening. Two reasons. I think the first reason is we won't sell him.
At all.
I don't think we'll sell him. I think
Wilfried Zaha will be a Crystal Palace player next year.
I think he will be a Crystal Palace player next season. I don't think anyone out there in other clubs value him as much as we do, as we value him for us. And until they do, then he's going to stay with us. And does he? When he comes back, is he going to have a grudge? Is he going to not turn up for training? No, I don't think he will. I think he's a professional. He's still only 26. Yeah. I think he can come out next season and he can have the season of his life, improve on what he's done the last two seasons, and say to other clubs out there, I'm not, you know, they valued me at 70 million, I'm now worth 100 million, and get 20 goals for us. I honestly believe that. I think he's a good lad at heart, and he had his experience when he was younger at Manchester United. He wouldn't want to, I don't think he'd want to do the nasty on Crystal Palace. And we cannot, as I say, we cannot afford to let him go unless we've got a replacement. Otherwise, we will go down.
Can I just give you a flip side perspective before we get you in there, Dia? Because you say do the nasty on Palace, and that's completely fair. I just want to see what you mean by that, because there's another side to it. So, for instance, Arsenal, Koscielny, he wants to leave. And a lot of fans are saying, 9 years at the club, that's terrible. you've ruined your legacy, you've tarnished how we have years of you. But the flip side is, he's 33. He now wants to go and play in France, where he's from, where his family's from. Let him go. He's had his time. Is there not a feeling, Zaha, you've helped us, you've made a massive contribution, you not single-handedly helped us stay up. Now go and try it. I don't want to say a bigger club is into Condescend Palace, but maybe someone who's playing European football at the minute. Is there that, or you don't see it that way at all?
Well, why did he sign a 5-year contract last summer then? You know, it doesn't.
But a contract's worth in today's football and society.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I completely agree.
I'm sorry, but if you don't go and sign a 5-year contract and then say next season, I want to go, I've always wanted to go, blah blah blah. Well, sorry,
but look at Arnautovic in January. He signed a new deal because they go, oh, we'll give you more wages. Yeah. Sign a deal, and he goes, I'm still going to beg for a move in 6 months.
Yeah,
I understand it, but with Palace and the Zaha situation, I feel like Palace needs to think about it in business ways, because if Zaha leaves, he's our main man right now. There's a chance that we could get relegated, and in the future, the financial circumstances could get a lot worse. So I feel like we need to look at it that way. And I agree with James in a way that I don't feel like Zaha is going to cause a hissy about. He's just going to come back to Palace, and he will train as it is. And he's off right now due to what happened at the AFCONs. He was away for a while, and he just returned right now. So there's no panic there. He's enjoying his holiday. You can see it on his social media. And yeah,
he's on a jet ski.
He's on a jet ski. So I don't feel like
he's not stressed.
Yeah, he's not stressed. He's enjoying life. And I agree with you. I don't see
a horrible time. I've just signed a new deal. Someone wants me for 70 million, and I'm on holiday on a jet ski.
Yeah, I mean, what a lifestyle. But unless Arsenal actually do bid the 80 million that we want, I don't see him leaving, and I don't see Arsenal bidding that much. So I'm fairly confident at this stage. And the Reece Nelson thing potentially coming.
Yeah, we haven't even touched upon that. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that helps more Arsenal than us. We develop Reece Nelson for 1 year, we play him, and then we send him back to you.
Very valid. Yeah, I agree. I said earlier that Arsenal deal, if that is true, is win-win for Arsenal. They get Zaha, you develop Reece Nelson, he plays week in, week out for Palace, which you wouldn't do for Arsenal this year, and then he comes back to us. But you'd still get a very good player. You are getting something,
I want 60 million and Aubameyang. And I'm hoping some Arsenal fans listen there, because I'm giving it straight back to you, Arsenal fans.
Yeah, good for you.
That's what is how much we rate Zaha.
Yeah. Well, this was my next question. Just quickly, then, what is Zaha's valuation to you? Where would you open up the paper and you go, all right, well, I can't argue that he went at that price. Realistically, let's be realistic here. I know, because he's your player, you don't want him to go. But realistically, what is Zaha's valuation
for Palace? I think 70 mil. 70 to 80
million. I'd say
for
80
Palace.
Million, yeah.
For Palace.
Not a penny less, no.
No, for Palace, he's worth that much.
And he's 26. He's still got, really, his best years in front of him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, at Palace, he's still going to be the main man. If he goes to Arsenal, that might hinder his development in a way that he won't be the star man and not everything will run through him. And I feel like Zaha loves being the guy and controlling and orchestrating the attack.
Just look at what happened at Arsenal last season. He absolutely ran the show. And every Arsenal fan that went to that game or saw it, they will, and they've said it because I've heard them talking about Zaha as a signing on the show here with Johnny. They all said Zaha was fantastic that day, and that was at the Emirates, and he absolutely ran the show. He was brilliant.
Well, they said that was the day that Unai Emery fell in love with him. It's like, we need this guy on the wings.
Best player on the pitch.
Yeah, but I think that's not doing a disservice to Zaha. I think he was brilliant all year. I think he's really come into his own now. And if I'm a Palace fan, I don't want him to go. And we don't... It's not like you're not hard up anymore. I know we just heard a little bit about the loss, but you have sold Wan-Bissaka. We don't need to be forced to do anything. So we know the valuation, 70 million. Arsenal pants, fay up, because he is going nowhere. Love sports. You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here with me, Charlie Hawkins, James and Dia. We were going to talk to Ed Ahrens. He's running a little bit behind, but we are going to get him on the phone tonight. We're going to be talking to him in around 5-10 minutes time. But let's look now. Just over two weeks to the Premier League kickoff. We've talked a little bit about transfers, a little bit about pre-seasons, but realistically, what do we want to see from now until day one kickoff?
Well, we've got 3 games left in pre-season, pretty much. We've got Bristol City, AFC Wimbledon, and Hertha Berlin at Selhurst Park. So in terms of performances and maybe results, kind of see improvements because we're coming towards the start of the Premier League, starting with Bristol City on a weekend. So that's what I want to see personally, because especially from the fullbacks, Joe Ward and Van Aanholt, I need to see glimpses of hope because I'm genuinely really worried about going into next season with both of them starting there.
Yeah, I want to see some clean sheets for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, against friendlies against Barnet and Nottingham Forest, I, going forward, Bristol City, I want to see a clean sheet. Ideally, you want to see one of the strikers score at least one goal. I think if we can build up over the next two or three weeks, the defence, get them communicating really well, defending really well, not conceding, and get the odd goal, then the confidence will build from that. And hopefully by the time we start, I think we've got a really good opportunity the first game of the season. We've got Sheffield United away, which I'm going to. I'm allowed to go to that one. Everton first, which is, again, I think, winnable.
Yeah,
but Sheffield
game.
United away, which I think is a definite target 3 points, that one.
Mm.
Because
massively.
They will be obviously a bit naive, haven't been in the Premier League for a few years now.
Chris Wilder will have him drilled, though. Good coach.
But remember Huddersfield, their first game in the Premier League at Selhurst Park, they beat us 3-0. So
I always find it tricky when you play against them upcoming sides, because you look at them and you go, not in a disrespectful way, we should be targeting 3 points here. We're a well-established Premier League side. Then they come up and they surprise you. Arsenal have had their troubles over the years. It's the newly sides that do well. And, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Are you going to get a Wolves, who are very good, or are you going to get a Fulham, who didn't really fare that well last year?
No, we played Fulham the first away game of the season, didn't we? We beat them. Yeah, I was there as well. 2-0.
Yeah. Slup and...
So, I think, Fulham didn't have a great season, did they? Obviously going down. But generally speaking, I think, especially with the teams that come up, and even from Crystal Palace's point of view, we've had some horrendous first games of the season when we've just been promoted. So I think the opportunity is there to get 3 points off a team that's just come up, because they are going to be a little bit naive, a little bit, you know, not really used to the possession wise, keeping the ball and not having that many opportunities.
Premier League sharpness.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't get the second chances so much in the Premier League when you lose the ball. So, clean sheets is a priority for me, definitely.
All right. Well, heading into this new season, what are your expectations and predictions for the season beyond?
It's hard now. I don't know. Like, of course, to stay up, I feel like that's going
to be... Is that really it, to stay up?
But in the club's perspective, I think that's going to be the case. And you saw it last season in terms of the way that we played. At times, we were playing for a draw rather than going for the win. And you could see
it
in the tactics. Yeah. So
I would never say Palace are a side fighting for survival.
But it's just so dangerous that, let's say, we do go for it and results don't go our way and we actually do go down, then Premier League money compared to the Championship is something else, and that would be it's very dangerous. I understand why the club wants to stay up, but me personally, I want to go and push on.
But your home form is so strong. You're a real tough team to beat at Selhurst Park.
No, away form.
No, but you're a very tough side to beat at home, I think.
At home last season we were dreadful.
Really?
Yeah. Last season at away from home we were sixth, I think, in the Premier League in terms of record. But at home, we were like 19th. We struggled to score goals.
But historically, we're usually pretty good at home.
Yeah.
But we had a bad season. But what Dion was saying, I think, what are my expectations for next season? Well, at the moment, I'm worried. And I think we will be bottom half. I think we might just stay up. And that's because we've lost a striker, you know, Batshuayi, who's gone back to Chelsea. And we only started playing well and getting the results in the second half of the season when he came on loan and we got a few people back from injuries. So if we can spend some of this 50 million on replacing or getting, I don't know if we'll get Batshuayi now because of Chelsea's situation, they might want to retain him. But if we can get somebody who hits the ground running, or if God forbid Benteke finds his form.
I literally just typed Christian Benteke into the laptop and then you brought him up because you say his tracker. There was one time when he was potent in the Premier League and you must have been like rubbing your hands together when you signed him. It's just not happened, has it?
That first season was all right, 17 goals.
Yeah.
then it just went downhill. Yeah, I really don't know.
But what was the cause in that? I don't know. Is that Hodgson, the system?
I feel like system plays a part. It's not only Benteke that struggled, and I don't think that's a coincidence. But then again, even before that, it seems like a confidence issue. And he had this injury. He had this very long injury, and he did come back, and he actually seemed a bit confident. So I don't know. Next season is going to be a fresh start for him, and it's like the same with Connor Wickham. I just hope that they stay fit, first of all, and then the rest. They can, you know, the game. They've got game in them. They can play football. They're good players, but it's just staying fit as well and being confident. So that's the most important thing as well.
Well, you're talking about Christian Benteke there, which brings me to the next thing, because I know you want to talk about another famous Palace legend of a forward, because it is time for your club legend of the week. Yep, it is time for this week's Crystal Palace's club legend of the week. James, Dia,
yeah.
Who is it?
So it's going to be Mark Bright this week.
Yeah, Mark Bright.
Was this you come together over this? Was there any disagreements or straight away?
No disagreements.
Yeah, no disagreements. We just...
There might have been last week. I wasn't there.
Yeah, last week he wasn't there. We had Friedman, yeah. And last week.
Yeah, but I fortunately stayed away from last week, so they didn't get the the other side.
See, so when you're involved, there's a lot of senses there.
it was just a bit of an issue with last week.
Yeah, we won't go into it. We're still pre-watershed. It's only 8:42.
But no, I'm more than happy for Mark Bright, because he was a player that I grew up watching, you know, in the team of the mid-80s to 90s. Part of the Ian Wright, Mark Bright partnership, which got us to third in the old Division One, and got us to a cup final. And not only was he a great player and a great support for Ian Wright to get all the goals that he did, but he's been so good to the club. I mean,
he's a real ambassador for the club.
He is. And he's worked with the youth team. He's helped Steve Parish on scouting missions. I think he pretty much see him at most games now, don't you?
Yeah, we're next to Heath Parish, so he's noticeable. And he was Mark Bright, of course, he was before my days. I never got to see him play. But I would imagine you've heard about him, it's the same for me.
And it's those players that they live on, don't they? They're still strong, and it always seems, I'm sure maybe you'll agree, that he seems like just a genuine, lovely bloke with it, just genuine, really nice. And that's why I think Palace fans really love him even more, don't they?
He is a nice guy, and I had the fortunate opportunity to sit next to him at a dinner when we had a charity event at Crystal Palace, and I was talking to him about me. I went to Russia on a trip with a school, sixth form, and he'd been played in Russia, and we were having a great chat. And it's a lovely, lovely guy, really nice guy. And I've bumped into him since when I was working up in London, and obviously he recognised my face and he'd say hello in the street. You know, nothing's above him or beyond him. He's just a very personable person. And I think he came under very difficult circumstances. He came from the Midlands. I think it was Leicester. And there was quite a bit of racism at the time. And, he started to sort of rebuild his life with Palace. And Steve Coppell was the manager. And he fitted in really well. And I don't think we've never really had a major issue with racism at Crystal Palace. He fitted in really well, didn't he?
Who would you compare him to in terms of a modern player?
Oh, good question.
Yeah, so he would, obviously in those days it was like 4-4-2, wasn't it? So he would be, it'd be a target player. So you'd compare him to an on-form Benteke. Glenn Murray.
Is he someone then, Mark Bright, Dia, that you always were shown like video clips of him, or like him scoring goals or stuff?
Yeah, 100%. Even like at the stadium, you will see him around the ground and stuff. He's always connected with the club, and he does, he commentates as well for Palace TV at times for the pre-season games. So yeah, he's always been connected. And when you think of Mark Bright, the first thing that comes into my head is Bright and Wright. Their partnership is something that's been stuck in my head as so iconic, even though I didn't get to witness it.
Yeah.
From how everyone describes it, is that it was probably the best partnership under Palace. I don't know what you think.
Well, the Wright and Bright was a coined phrase in those days.
I love that. It was brilliant.
It was used every week in the newspapers, and we were that good that we got to third place.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was we were due to go into Europe, but we didn't because they lifted the ban on Liverpool. who were second place.
Yeah.
And so Liverpool ended up going into Europe instead of Crystal Palace.
Yeah, something like that. And that must have been annoying.
I was gutted. really gutted.
Well, there you have it. There was no disagreement this week. Mark Bright is your club legend of the week.
See what your club legend was wearing at classicfootballshirts.co.uk. The place for football shirts. Love Sport.
Oh, we can hear you now, Red. And you know what that
okay,
means?
Great.
There is so much pressure on you to be great with this first answer because we've come back to you for a third time. I'm only kidding.
Okay, well, I can run a bit.
James and Dee are both saying that Zaha will be a Palace player next year. Ed, how do you feel about it all?
Well, I think it's going to be a long 3 weeks, put it that way. At this stage, it looks like he might stay. But I know there's a lot of determination from his side, especially to leave. But obviously, Palace are not going to accept any less than they think he's worth, which is, you know, somewhere in the region of 80 million, maybe slightly less. And as it stands, no one's come anywhere near to that. I believe there was a new approach from Arsenal this week, but again, Palace are just not interested in playing ball at the moment, especially having sold Aaron Wan-Bissaka already to Man United. You know, that they're not going to let him go on the cheap, basically. No matter what Zaha's family and his agents want and he wants. And he's on a long-term contract, so it seems like it's, you know, a messy few weeks coming up. But obviously, Palace are desperate to keep him if they can, and he's desperate to leave. So it's a tricky situation. I think Palace fans obviously will be hoping that he does stay and then they can patch up the differences.
Do you think there's a chance of Zaha being upset about it and saying that, look, I'm going to leave. If you don't let me leave, then I'm not going to play. Me personally, we were talking about it earlier on in the show, but we don't see that happening. But do you think there's that chance of something like that happening?
There's always a chance, but he's not that kind of character. Mm. You know, he's always knuckled down and got on with it in the past. But I think there is a sense that, you know, if Palace don't sell him, he will feel, not betrayed, that's too strong a word, but he feel let down by Palace, because I believe that he was kind of nothing formal, but you know that they said last summer that if they get an offer for him, which is reasonable, then they would let him go. And from his point of view, maybe he thinks that they've had a reasonable offer, but I don't think that Palace would agree with that. So yeah, there is a chance of that, but I don't think he would go that far. But then you never know, and I think the next stage might be a formal transfer request. I think that might happen in the next week or so.
Yeah, hi Ed, it's James here. What worries me is that, you know, we've got 24 hours left of this window and then suddenly someone comes in with, you know, the 80 mm-hmm. million that we want. And I personally wouldn't sell him unless we had some backup, because you and I know we haven't got strikers to probably keep us up next season unless... Yeah. Benteke suddenly finds form, which I'm not confident about. We haven't got Batshuayi, who was with us on loan. You know, he could have been the player that could have stepped up to the plate and helped us next season. Connor Wickham is still a bit of a worry whether he's going to be fit enough. So 24, right, if it, you know, what would you do if you were the owner, Steve Parrish, 24 hours to go, Arsenal coming with 80 million and you haven't got anyone else lined up, what would you do?
Oh, it's a very tough question. I think they have got, there are contingency plans in place for players that, you know, if he does go, there are certain players I know that they're looking at in case he does go. But like you say, 24 hours to go, unlikely to be able to, you know, rush those through, because also, you know, clubs are going to be putting up their promises for their players if they know that Palace have got, you know, best part of 100 million in their back pocket from player sales plus all the TV money, etc. So it's going to be a very tricky situation. I imagine that they will kind of come up with some sort of deadline to clubs, you know, so they don't get into that situation. But like I said, it's a really sort of messy situation at the moment, because he's has his heart set on leaving. So and if they do get the bid for him and then turn it down, it even more gets even more messy, and then you may be into the sort of territory where he does refuse to play.
Do you think he has actually got his heart set on leaving? Because nothing's actually come from him personally, and Roy said that he's not spoken to him about it.
Well, I think, he has said in an interview that he wants to play Champions League football.
But I know Arsenal are not in the Champions League.
That's a good point. Very good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. No, I think he does want to leave. But, you know, this is, like we're saying, about him. He's a professional and he does act professionally. And he wouldn't, you know, he loves Palace and it's his boyhood club and they've helped him resurrect his career after United. He, really does love the club, but I think it's more of a personal ambition thing with him. And I kind of understand that, really, that I think he is capable of playing at a high level or for, you know, in Europe or Europa League or Champions League. And I think he feels like he wants to test it, test himself. So, but obviously he doesn't want to hurt his relationship with, you know, at Palace where he is loved and he does love the club. So it's a tricky situation. It was much easier for Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who, you know, won great season, but was easier for a club to buy him in a way because he was on less money and slightly cheaper fee. And, you know, so it's a tricky situation for Wilf. I do kind of, hopefully it'll get resolved in a good way for Palace, but I'm not sure how it's going to turn at this stage. It's really up in the air, I think.
Just very quickly then, Ed, before we lose you, 2 weeks to the Premier League season, just over. Are you excited, nervous, especially the way the situation's at the minute? You haven't brought anyone in. Well, one player, Henderson, Wan-Bissaka's gone, Zaha maybe, still need a striker. Are you more concerned than excited ahead of the new season?
I'm pretty concerned, to be honest. I have to be. I'm normally quite a pessimistic Palace fan, as most of us are. But I am quite concerned this year because, like you say, I think Newcastle have just signed Joel Linton. So it makes Palace the only team who haven't spent any money on a player this summer. And obviously they've got in the, you know, a lot of money for Wan-Bissaka. And like you say, there are several areas in the team that need strengthening. So it is a bit of a concern, I think. There are some good players at Palace, but the squad isn't that big. And, you know, a few injuries and take Zaha out of the equation. And I think they would be down there, certainly, struggling, especially without Zaha. So it's some worrying times for Palace, I think. But hopefully they will be able to cheer everyone up a little bit in the next couple of weeks. I know they are working on some deals, but nothing as yet has come through.
Hopefully some positive news. Ed, we really appreciate you calling back and getting us on. We really wanted to speak to you. And there you have it, guys. It was the first week of the Crystal Palace Fan Show back in Essex that I was hosting. It was a pleasure to meet you. Next week, I do hope we have some good news. Zaha will still be here. And hopefully you'll have that striker. James, Dia, pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. You.
And we'll see you next week. Up the Eagles.
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.